A great many of us wonder how scientists like Einstein and Tesla got their ideas, got their inspiration, got their insights into our universe. And today we are going to delve into a possible explanation for inspiration, what artists call the muse, and what I've termed many times on this program, the Akashic Field or the Akashic Resonance. Is the Akashic Field a repository for our evolution, for machines, for science, for new physics, for a way to look at the future from a different point of view? Is this the place that the great Hindu yogis and seers referenced as the home for new thought, new ideas, and new inspiration? Today, we're speaking with Irvin Laszlo. He is a twice nominated Nobel Peace Prize recipient, the author of 75 books, and he is really the spokesperson for the Akashic Field, how it works, how you plug into it, and where you can gain your inspiration. All this in the news with Bruce Fenton on Earth Ancients. Saturday, July 17th, 2021. This is Earth Ancients. I'm your host, Cliff Dunning. Well, hello. Happy day to you. How you doing? And hope you are well. Hey, we talk a lot about unknown sciences, perhaps physics to also. You know, there's a component to a lot of these ancient sites that we go to that are not easily explained. And if you look at them from an unknown or sacred science, then the light begins to shine on possibilities. And forever, we've talked about telluric fields, ley lines, this earth energy that the pre-Diluvian and perhaps pre-dynastic early proto-cultures, be it Maya, Chinese, Egyptian, Middle Eastern, so forth and so on, understood. They understood how these energy fields worked, how to plug into them, which is really where it's at. And I believe that there was a sacred science. I call it sacred because we don't have a name for it. It's, for me, it's very special because the science behind it is probably thousands of years old. And the previous civilization, the previous advanced civilization, and we can call it whatever, the maritime culture, which is in quotes, Atlantis, Lemuria, Proto-Maya, Proto-Egyptian, Egyptian/Atlantean, and so forth, spent a great deal of time actually developed in a manner different than our science today, which is very linear. And it's the scientific method is you have to determine what it is, so forth and so on, and back it up with credible, observable evidence. And that's caused a lot of problems, especially when you start dealing with cosmological issues like the Maya, who were beginning to find out, plugged into the cosmos, that their cities were aligned with cosmological or solar cosmology. That's a big word for constellations. So one temple aligned to a planet, or a pyramid aligned to a cluster, or so forth and so on. And what we don't know is why was that done? I'm beginning to think that there's a subtle energetics going on here that these ancient cultures understood, utilized, and harnessed. And so when we start talking about this, it's like people roll their eyes and go, well, how do you know that? How do you know that? Today, we're going to be presenting a Nobel Peace Prize nominee who has written a great deal about the Akashic Fields, the Akashic Records. His name is Irvin Laszlo. I've wanted to have him on the program for a while. And what he has talked about, if you've ever heard any of his audios or read any of his books, he's written like 75 books. He explains these concepts like sacred science and how it works with quantum physics and some of the new sciences that are erupting to help us explain the Big Bang theory, string theory, and all these new theories that are emerging and help us understand how the subtle energies, not only of Earth, of the human condition, the human physiology, the human body, and other planets and solar systems, it begins to explain some of these things and you know, how the ancients may have used this and or used these systems. So I'm really excited about today's program. I've wanted to have Laszlo on the program for a couple of years. He's just not available. He's very much in demand. And he's a philosopher. He's considered one of the top minds that can speak on these spiritual sciences. And what we're going to talk about today, or what he's going to present today, is a kind of a deeper understanding of what the Akashic Field is, how these yogis, these Hindu seers, connected and were able to explain how it works. Because, remember, my explanation for it, it may not be my, I might have borrowed it from someone, but the Akashic Field is this database, this cloud storage of everything that's happened in the past, everything that's presently going on, and everything that is happening in the future, all the data that goes along with that, all the interactions that go along with that, all the cosmological elements that go along with that. And so that's my simplification of it. I'm not a scientist, and I am not a physicist either. So I can't talk in scientific terms, but Laszlo, our guest today, presents these concepts in great detail. And it's important to hear because one of the things, and this is the reason I like Laszlo, one of the things he talks about is there is fundamental change coming along now in the sciences. He calls it a paradigm shift. And it's going from Newtonian theory to Einstein's theory. And then we begin looking at the future of science to explain things. And we're in a rut right now when it comes to archaeology. These students who study anthropology and become eventually archaeologists are being taught kind of out-of-date, antiquated systems of evaluation. And they use comparative analysis to pit one civilization against the other. That's the big focus of anthropology. They would never consider any civilization on Earth anomalous and questionable and even off-world consideration because they're not taught that. The huge problem I have is that they cannot take their blinders off and see a unique civilization like the Maya. The Maya are so radically different. They're almost like from outer space. And this is the big issue with the Maya. The Maya are always considered Stone Age people or contemporaries of the ancient Romans. Well, what these archaeologists and these professors that teach this are not paying attention to is that the Maya that we understand today are not the people, are not the civilization that actually built the great cities. That's their ancestors. And this is why Hancock's work is also important, is when we start talking about this devastating asteroid hit that basically wiped the planet clean. It was a terminating event that destroyed probably 85 to 90% of the human population on the planet. And whoever was left had to reboot our planet. And this is where we get into places like Göbekli Tepe and pre-dynastic Egypt and the Maya that came about after the Great Destruction. But it was for me to study the Maya, we learned that they is a degenerative culture. Kings that were fighting, blood sports. It was not in any manner the great civilization that developed this pyramidal energy that I had discovered, that John Burke discovered and actually measured. So today we're going to talk about what the Akashic Field is, how it works, how to plug into it. And by the way, I mean, I mentioned this a while ago. I have discovered a way to plug in to a lot of these temples and citadels or civic centers that were built by the Maya, by the pre-Inca, by the proto-Egyptians at places like Hathor, Dendera, the Hathor Temple, the Isis Temple, and for me, the recently discovered Bes Temple, which is right next to Hathor. All these places were built by cultures that we consider megalithic cultures because they built with great precision using blocks that weigh megatons. And how in the hell they positioned them, we don't know. On another note, one of the things that Laszlo brings up is that people like Tesla tapped into this Akashic Field, and many of his inventions were so far in advance that that he couldn't beyond a sample couldn't manufacture them with any precision. I mentioned a few months ago the Wardenclyffe Tower in New York that he built that was designed to produce free energy, and his work would have damaged the ability to charge for electricity. This is the beginning of Edison and all his power generators, the power cities and street lamps and so forth and so on. So this is an important message that we get, these sciences, and how artists, writers, scientists, all the creative people are able to tap in to this data bank known as the Akashic Field, and access information. We do hear a little bit about how to do it, and I will give you a hint. Learning how to quiet your mind enough to receive data, the inspiration to do things, the motivation to do things, the aha moments of research, so forth and so on, all can be linked to the Akashic Field. So it's kind of cool. It's kind of cool when you start presenting data capture in that manner. It makes you rethink the way you go about things. And I personally learned a great deal today, and I think you're going to hear a brilliant mind talking about a very complex subject, the sacred cosmological science of the Akashic Field. So, hey, I want to mention Earth Ancients podcast has been awarded a must-listen by Whelp magazine in London. This is we are listed as a top 20 new and exciting podcast for the year. And Whelp magazine is based in London. So thank you, Whelp magazine, for that honor. We appreciate it. And I have to also say that we've been nominated by the People's Choice Awards as a top history and culture podcast as well. So really, really nice to hear that. I guess this is awards season because we've been getting some interesting awards. Last year around this time, the French Consortium of Media presented us as a top podcast in France, which was nice. I think that was April of 2020. So it's nice to be recognized, and the Earth Ancients team and myself want to thank those at Welp Magazine for, I guess it's the editors, for choosing us and considering us a must-listen to for this year. So there you go. All right, we've got a great show for you today. Bruce Fenton's back, and then we get into Akashic Records. So away we go.
Of all the boys I've known, and I've known some.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Coming to you live from around the world, it's Earth Ancient News.
All right, we're heading to England to speak with our science editor, that is Bruce Fenton. And this week, Bruce is going to talk to us about this discovery that was made in Germany. And the title is 51,000-year-old engraved bone is Neanderthal artwork. I'm looking at it. It's kind of interesting. Bruce, how are you doing? How are things in your neck of the woods?
Yeah, doing pretty well. Nice summer weather again. It's been up and down, very strange. But yeah, today, nice weather, so I'm good.
Excellent. So, well, what is this all about? It's a small, it looks almost like a sculpture, but what do they believe it is? Talk a little bit about and identify, if you can, describe what we're looking at.
Sure. So what it is a discovery that was made at a site called, I may mispronounce this, but I guess the Einhornenhall, which is basically the unicorn cave in northern Germany. Mm-hmm. And so they discovered a piece of bone from the phalanx of a giant deer that lived in the sort of the late middle Paleolithic. And this one obviously stood out to them because they realized that it has deliberate etching patterns on it, which are inconsistent with just butchering. These are deliberate possibly symbolic, but they are kind of almost arrowhead-shaped engravings, like notches that have been engraved into it. And so they're aware that these had to have been sort of symbolic and express some kind of meaning. That would have been in itself interesting, but they also, because of the date on it at 51,000 years, it infers that it's most likely Neanderthal because they were prevalent in Europe before 45,000 years ago, when modern humans began to really kind of make, inroads into Europe around that period. So being sort of, 6,000 years before what we believe is the first arrival of modern humans into that area, that this is pretty concrete as Neanderthal artwork. And so that's the radical aspect of this, is it kind of changes that view of, Neanderthal.
Well, that's what I wanted to talk to you about, because the Neanderthals are always put down as not a very creative or bright race of hominin. And this begins to really tip the scales towards a creative person that is either transferring an image that he's seen onto bone, or perhaps this is some form of shamanistic tool with markings. How have they defined the markings?
Yeah. So first of all, I should say that, yeah, there probably is maybe a shamanic aspect, because, they point out that, they've chosen this bone from, a very impressive animal, these giant sized deer, so would be a pretty enormous animal. So that gives you an idea of a kind of a power, a powerful animal that they've chosen to take this from to engrave it, which would fit with the idea, of a power object, right? So it probably is shamanic. I know they can't be definitive, but yeah, it sort of leans towards that. That's what I would say. It definitely leans towards that. But these kind of engravings, same kind of patterns, we do see on some ochre and stonework at other sites, in Africa and in further into East, into Asia. So it's a very similar, what they call chevron shape. These kind of also like a V shape. And you see those on other artifacts. Those and the kind of hashtag engravings are two of the earliest kind of prevalent forms of artistic expression when you go back about this early. So it's quite interesting. So we're seeing an overlap between the kind of art that early modern humans were doing, but we're seeing it in an area that is almost certainly a Neanderthal area. So they're expressing the same kind of thinking that our ancestors, our direct ancestors were. So that's kind of obviously changing the view of the primitive ape man, you know, almost an animal compared to us. And in this article, they also raise the point that, you know, in the last few years, we've already come to understand that Neanderthals were creating birch tar adhesives, where they would heat up birch and get this sap comes out. You can make a kind of a glue out of that. So we know they were doing that. We know that they were also using pretty elaborate stone tools, wooden weapons, bone tools. So it was no longer a case of just thinking of them as just able to, you know, break a rock and make an axe. So they were quite technological in their view, you know, for their time. Mm-hmm. And now we're seeing that they also have, alongside the technologies, they also have this artistic expression. So when you combine all that and the fact that they obviously mated with modern humans, that they just sound like another race of people, you know, to really change that.
Yeah, we don't have Neanderthals. They died out, apparently, or they were intermingled to the point where modern Homo sapiens, we do have some genetic markers that are Neanderthal, right?
Absolutely, yeah. So I would say that the evidence points to, as you suggest, that more that they are absorbed into a larger population of, you know, of our direct kind of modern human ancestors. We have about 2-3% of their DNA typically in most Europeans and, you know, Americans. And then in parts of East Asia, it ranges up to about 5%. So, you know, it's a significant amount, but not huge. So obviously they became a minority group at some point and were kind of absorbed.
Okay. So we're going to place this article with some outstanding photographs on the Facebook page. Go to Facebook, go to Earth Ancients, go to the group page. You'll see it under this week's banner on the Akashic Fields with Irvin Laszlo, and you'll see all the details. Bruce, this is interesting. What are some final thoughts on the importance of this discovery?
Well, I think it's important. It really gets us to rethink the way we have discriminated against Neanderthals in a way, you know, in that long history of thinking them as ape men, that finally, we can say that they were basically just people, just like our ancestors. And I hope that we'll find more and more evidence that supports that, because it seems to be leaning that way, that they were just, you know, another group of people wandering around, you know. So yeah, really exciting.
Yeah, we should talk at another time. It's like every single year there's another hominin discovered. It's like there's different parts of the world that were labs. It seems like they were labs, you know, for
the China. You've seen that another skull now, isn't it, from China, this giant sized one that came out last week. So we'll probably have to cover that in another segment. But yeah,
exactly.
They keep finding them.
Yeah. Someone's got to write a book on these different these hominins and tell us what the story is. All right, Bruce, take care, be well, and we'll talk to you next week.
Okay, excellent. Take care. Bye bye.
Great deal about the Akashic Fields, where it is, how to access its information. And it seems like the yogis, the Hindu seers, are the ones who define it for us here in the Western world. I've talked about it a lot. I actually thought that for a long time, people like Edgar Cayce, who was a noted psychic, were able to tap into the Akashic Field. But today, we have a thought leader, Irvin Laszlo, who has really not only defined it in this book we're talking about today, but has been talking about it consistently for a number of years. Irvin Laszlo is a philosopher, a systems scientist. He has been nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize twice. He's written more than 75 books and over 400 articles, and he is cited as one of the 100 most spiritually influential living people in the world, according to Watkins Mind, Body, and Spirit magazine. It's really an honor to have Irvin on the program, and welcome to Earth Ancients.
Well, it's good to be with you. Good to be on this program.
Thank you. There's so much I want to ask you. In the time we have, I'm just going to highlight it. The Akashic field was first, I think, well, you can tell us, but it was presented by the Hindu yogis who had been accessing it through their practice. Why is an understanding of the Akashic fields important for us today?
Well, this is just one name for a concept, for an idea, for even a theory that has been as old as systematic philosophy. The Greeks knew about this. Plato particularly, it's known as the Platonic realm, where the soul is located and where the ideas are located. In quantum physics, it's now known as the implicate order through David Bohm. So this Akashic is just one of the names, a very popular name. And since I'm dealing with this field, I have been dealing with this. Some people called my attention to it already about 15, 20 years ago, that it's really what I'm talking is about the Akashic field or the Akasha domain. Mm-hmm. They didn't actually talk about a field at the time, the Hindus. They talked about a dimension of the universe, you know, a dimension mm-hmm. of reality, you know, with the earth, air, fire, water were the four major dimensions. But they said that there is a deeper dimension out of which emerges all the other dimensions. Mm-hmm. And then the great yogi Vivekananda has written earlier in the 20th century, written a popular famous book, Raja Yoga, in which he's describing the Akasha as the ground of all things. Everything we know, everything that exists, emerges out of this field. So you see, the Akasha is an age-old concept. But our intuition that there is more to this world than the reality that we observe, that there is something deeper, it goes way back thousands of years, even before that. All the mystical schools, I mean, you know very well, talking about the Earth Ancients, that practically all of the deeper schools of thought talk about something which is a foundation, which is a basis for what we actually do observe. The everyday reality has been held to be the whole reality only in the 19th, 20th century, when we denied the existence of anything deeper. Before that, it was recognized. And now with the advent of quantum physics and with unified field physics altogether, it's coming back again. It seems that in order to understand the world, you have to understand the source, the origins of this world. So I'm calling it the Akashic Field because people are familiar with the Akashic Chronicles and people are interested in this concept. I could call it the unified quantum field, then it would be for quantum physicists primarily. Mm-hmm. Or we call it the deep dimension of the world, and any mystics and mediums would respond to that. It's the same concept. This concept is old as history, as thinking, and it is, I think, a true concept because it will be a tremendous fallacy to believe that the world begins and ends, and that's all there is about what we perceive in space and time. Space and time is just one realm.
You write that the Akashic field is a memory field which exists independent of the human brain. Can we consider it something like, in today's technical terms, cloud? Is it like a cloud computing bank, a data storage that is suspended and accessible through a certain technique? Or how would you describe it?
Good idea, yeah. Certainly. It is a kind of a cloud. it's something to which we can upload and from which we can download. In more technical terms, it's in quantum physics, it's the implicate order which impacts on, or it's known as informs, it's written with a hyphen, informs the explicate order, which is what we observe. So yes, indeed, there is this dimension which is in computer language, it would be a cloud, it would be a Dropbox or whatever we call it, to which we can save, which conserves everything. There are some laws, and I'm describing these laws in this new book, and there are some laws that we can attribute to the Akashic field, because these laws are laws of the universe, and they are not laws that we can trace or find in our experience world. They are laws that go beyond the experience world. They are the basis of the experience world.
Hmm. By the way, the book we're talking about today is The Immutable Laws of the Akashic Field, Universal Truths for a Better Life and a Better World, which just came out very recently. I'm curious, until recently, it was the yogis who were able to explain the Akashic Field through their meditative practice. Today in the West, what is your suggested technique or access point to be able to download aspects of the Akashic Field?
Well, psychiatrists, psychotherapists, I know this. They're helping the clients or patients to enter an altered state of consciousness through hypnosis or breathing exercises or meditation or prayer. There are many techniques. But the key to this is, as Stanislav Grof, one of the founders of transpersonal psychology, has said, everyone can enter an altered state of consciousness. And in these states, what we know physically is that the brain waves, the electroencephalograph, the EEG waves slow down. They are at the alpha or even lower than the alpha level. They are the beta and the theta level. And these are slow waves. And when the brain operates in these regimes, these receptivity modes, then we have access to experiences that in the everyday world are not accessible. The everyday world of the delta waves, we perceive the surface of objects. We perceive sort of events in space and in time. But we don't perceive the origin of these events, not perceive the deeper reality behind it. So the way to enter it, to answer your question, is to enter the altered states, to assume an altered state of consciousness, which is a state of deep meditation or deep prayer. When it's deeper than that, still then it's a state of trance. And in this state, it appears, and this is the practice of psychotherapists and psychiatrists, that almost anything and everything that has happened to us can be recalled. There's nothing disappears. If you enter this state, you can be at the right prompting and right association. You can recall anything and everything that happened to you.
It's fascinating because the great example that you provide in the book is for individuals who have contacted it outside of that, who are not yogis, are people who have had near-death experiences.
Yes.
And they have this recall at some phase of the death process where they're shown all aspects of the living world that they have encountered. And you reference that as an aspect of the Akashic Field, but that's a small aspect, isn't it?
Well, yes, that's a so-called life review.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be a feature. Not everybody who comes back from these conditions of near death, but a certain percentage, probably about 25% of the people who come back and their normal brain functions again, they recall having had a life review. So that's one element, obviously. But it's clear that what we are talking about is a particular experience mediated by an altered state of the brain, a different kind of a brain function. But that's not all that there is to the Akashic field, not all that to the experience, because it appears that even when the brain is not functioning, when the person is clinically dead, the brain display of the electroencephalograph is flat. Even then, people recall, when they come back, recall having had conscious experiences. Again, not everybody, but a large percentage, significant percentage. And these are also after-death experiences. People, sometimes medium channel, people who have deceased, and these mediums come up with information that they themselves don't see how they could have accessed that information, but they seem to be getting it from the deceased persons. That's another large variety of evidence, all of which shows, which you could say in more technical terms, more up-to-date terms, that consciousness or conscious awareness is not confined to our brain. In contemporary terms, science terms, you could call it, the information which is accessed by our brain is non-local.
Right.
It is not confined to this particular point in space and in time.
Fascinating. You speak of a number of great scientists, Einstein, Tesla, and others, appearing to have access to this level of consciousness. Do you believe that they were tapping into the Akashic fields? I mean, especially Tesla with his radical ideas seems to be very out of place in the scientific world, and probably was the reason that he was doomed in many ways with his inventions. But do you believe that they were tapped in some level to the Akashic field?
I do. I think everybody who has true creativity and a genuine interest can move down to that level, down because I say it's a lower frequency level of the brain, but it's a level where our brain is a receptor that is going beyond the range that it has in everyday experience. Can extend it upwards and higher domains when we enter ecstatic states of trance, when the EEG waves are extremely fast, high frequency waves, or they go down into waves of into periods or regimes of dreaming or dreamlike states. You know, the Australian aborigines, they talk about the dream state, which is really the deeper reality, and they can connect to each other in the dream state.
Mm.
This is a widespread experience. So it's based on a very simple recognition. It's very basic. The conscious awareness is not a product of the brain. The brain is a transformer and at the same time a filter of the larger scope of consciousness that exists independently of the brain. We can just step into that. And what this larger scope is, it contains also the elements that we can associate with the Akashic field. And I describe some of these three major laws of that, but it means that we are actually can tap into this domain of the deep domain, the dream domain, the awakened dream state or hypnotic state in which our brain's receptivity is expanded. So we just perceive, we pick up information that goes far beyond the level of the everyday information of the brain, because the everyday information is very narrow, it's a narrow range. We know the electromagnetic spectrum, we only pick up a very small segment, or the audio spectrum, a very small segment. All the smells, sights, and whatever we encounter in experience is only a very small part of what we can now scientifically believe that there is. There's much more than that. And what there is, I just want to emphasize this one point, I think it's very important. This deeper dimension is not on the same level. It's not the same dimension as what we actually experience. It's what grounds that experience. And that's why I can talk about the immutable laws, because these, whatever is the basis for our experience, themselves do not change. Very simple example is everybody who plays chess, or can play cards or whatever games you play, you know that the games themselves vary. Everybody plays his own game, his or her own game. And a beginner plays a very different game from an expert, etc. But the rules for them don't change. Certain moves are possible and permitted, others are not. And these rules are the laws of the game. They are not on the same level as the game itself. The game changes, but you don't play the rules. We don't put the games, the rules up for change. That we have to accept. That's the way it is. So the universe operates on the basis of certain rules, laws. If it didn't, it would be a random universe. It would be a chaos. We couldn't orient ourselves. The fact that the universe is a coherent sphere, it means that there are basic regularities in space and time, which create the phenomena such that we can observe that phenomena, such that we can understand not all of it, but part of it. And this is a remarkable universe. What Einstein called the most remarkable fact of the universe is so coherent that we can understand it. Not all of it, but much of it we can understand. So let's remember, there is more to this world than what meets our ear, eye and ear.
Fascinating. You speak about the different phases of, I'm going to call it evolutionary science or science progressing, and you suggest that it's time for a paradigm shift. We're at a phase where there's too many questions coming up. Our current laws of physics and science are not answering the correct questions or able to be used for some of the sightings. Does the Akashic field influence these changes? Does it actually influence the human species and help it evolve by forcing it to change?
Well, you can answer this question by going back to the chess example. The laws of chess don't influence the way you play the game. They regulate the way you play the game. Now, the question is, if you know these laws, these rules, the chess, and you can make use of them, you can be a master. If you don't know them, you are a bumbling beginner, actually, you know. So what the laws do, they don't themselves act, but our recognition, our knowing them, influences the way we act. We can act more in tune, to put an everyday expression, more in tune with the world around us than being acting in a haphazard, selfish and willful way. Because the world is itself is a domain which is evolving according to laws, and it's coherent. Now we're recognizing that we are in tune. We are part of that symphony of evolution. If we recognize it, then we do what young people call in Star Wars. Then we go with the force.
Yeah.
The force is the force of evolution. It's the force of how things become. Things are not always the same, but they become. But the way they become, the rules of the game are not changing. As far as we know, the universe is what it was at the Big Bang, but it is still today. These basic laws were the same and are the same.
Fascinating. Dr. Fred Hoyle and Chandrawick Ramsey, who we've had on the program, termed the influence, possible influence of microbes hitting the Earth. They called it panspermia. And I'm wondering, and they talked a little bit about a driving consciousness behind this. Is there a consciousness, a greater force behind the Akashic fields that we haven't come to realize yet because it's just too great for our minds to perceive?
Well, I dare to propose that there is, and I dare to identify it in this book and also in other books that I've written recently. I call it an attractor. You know, in the system sciences, when you have a complex system, you try to decode how it works. you see that it doesn't work entirely by random and entirely randomness. There are some laws and rules, and then we say that this system obeys attractors. There are periodic point attractors, strange attractors, repeating attractors, etc. So I say that the universe operates by attractors. If you are religious or spiritual, you can call it the will of a great spirit, you know, or something, a transcendental being. In science, it's sufficient, I think, as we talk about an attractor that's built into the laws of nature. The laws of nature are not indifferent to what is happening. The laws of nature influence what is happening. Just the same way as if you play a chess, play the right way, then you can reach your goal, that you can make a chessmate for your opponent. Whereas if you don't play the right way, you can still can suffer defeat. Same way in the world, if you behave the right way, in tune with these laws of the Akashic field, then you can live and you can strive. If you go against them, you're taking chances. And ultimately, you can lose your coherence, which means you can lose your ability to live and to survive in this world.
Is the Akashic field a measurable body? Can we describe the dimension of it, or is it just everywhere? It's like huge.
Well, it's universal. You can't. Well, at least let me say this. At least it's confined to this universe. Mm-hmm. According to the latest cosmologists, you know, this universe was born in the Big Bang, 13.8 billion years ago. The processes that are unfolding now have had this start, their beginning at that time. But the universe is not all that there is. There's a larger reality, which the Greeks call the cosmos. So I say, yes, actually my question was, what is it confined to? What is it applying to? I would say the laws of nature that operating in this universe came into effect at the Big Bang, or potential. We must assume that in potential they were always there, but they were not expressed. At the Big Bang, it called forth the processes that are law-like processes that are following these laws. And so the laws stem, we could say, for practical purposes, stem from the Big Bang period. And they'll continue to operate in this world as long as the universe exists. And according to current cosmologists, it won't exist forever. The universe also ends, either in the big crunch or the big freeze, or in some state, possibly suspended in between. We don't know which one, depends on the weight of the proton, among other things. But it's clear that this universe is an evolutionary phenomenon that has random elements, chaotic elements, but is not on the whole random and chaotic. It's ordered, it's coherent. And that's the coherence that is there for us to seize and to maintain, to live with, and to live according to. Because when we do, then we follow nature. We follow what the Buddhists would call the Tao, you know. The Tao is everything that there is, and the way everything is informed by the Tao. In quantum physics, we can talk about informed by this deep dimension, the dimension that is below and beyond the everyday surface events of the world.
Wonderful. We're now at a turning point regarding communicating with other worlds and species. The American Pentagon has identified these UFOs as being flown by beings from another planetary system, possibly dimensional. Is it your belief that other civilizations, other planets have access to the Akashic field?
I think if you have evolution of the kind, which is basically here a carbon-based evolution operating in space and time and the specific conditions of the Earth, this planet. If evolution of this kind occurs elsewhere, then it's an evolution which conduces to higher and higher levels of perception, more and more awareness. Because that's what it does over here. It's difficult to believe that there will be civilizations that would not have reached a state of evolution. And if they did reach it, it's difficult to believe why wouldn't have they gone further. The Earth is a relatively young system as the universe goes. You know, if it's 3.8 billion history, the Earth with its 5 or 6 billion year history, and the consciousness on the Earth, and life on Earth, 200,000 years consciousness, these are figures that have been suggested. They are open to question, but it's limited. This is a limited development. So it seems that if this event is a universal phenomenon, which I think it is, all laws of nature are not limited to the universe. I think they either exist on the whole universe or they are not really laws. So I think if the universe contains other forms of life, other species, I would say, and they may be similar forms, and it's likely that they will have developed into levels of mentation, levels of brain function, levels of perception, levels of access to the world around it, which would include access to this deep dimension, which we call the Akashic Field.
Hmm. Yeah, we're coming close to the end of our time together. And I just have a couple more questions. I am curious if the early Hindu seers, yogis, were the ones who were writing about this, who were perceiving it. And obviously, they spent decades or most of their life in a meditative or altered state of consciousness to be able to tap into this Akashic field. What does a person who lives in the Western culture, who doesn't meditate, who doesn't have doesn't apply themselves in the same way that a yogi would, how do they utilize the Akashic field? Or do they have to look to those who are accessing it for the answers?
Well, we can all access it. I said that we need to enter a slightly or more very deeply altered state. I can talk about my own experience. I wouldn't call myself a mystique. I am sometimes considered a spiritually oriented scientist or thinker, but I have a normal, hopefully healthy mentality. I am open to inquiry, open to phenomena that we don't understand yet, but we are seeking to understand. And in that spirit, I allow things to happen which would be foreclosed if you try to insist that we know everything or we know enough about things to be able to exclude things. If you don't say anymore, this is impossible and this just can't happen, because then we actually don't perceive it. Most of the time, you know, it's true that we believe what we perceive, but it's also true that we perceive what we believe. If you really, really don't believe that something could exist, there's a very strong tendency not to perceive it, actually. So let it go. Let it come to you. That's the simple recipe which the Buddhists have known for thousands of years. I think all the great prophets in the West as well have been telling you, is that to let go by itself or through a spontaneous relationship to the world around you. In Christianity, the concept of love is a very primary one. If you relate lovingly to others around you and to the world, according to Jesus' teachings, you know, then you get close to the portals of heaven. Mm. So I think this is true in all cases. You have to allow a broader information field, to put them out, to the modern terms, to enter your mind. I allow it to come in when I speak. Very often when you have talks like this, I don't know what you're going to ask. I don't know exactly what you're going to talk about other than I first talk about the Akashic Field. But often I have a talk, then I'm told to express what I have in mind, what is important for me. And I allow things to come, and often happens, not always, but often happens, that I'm saying things I didn't know I was going to say. Hmm. And often I didn't know that I knew. Allow your mind to access a wider reality. That, I think, is the key to it.
It sounds like you're talking about from a creative point of view, it's like the muse who comes to the artist in a flash of inspiration or in a download of a music symphony. Is that kind of the access?
Yeah, but not necessarily limited to a flash. Yes, a flashes come. They give you insight. Interestingly enough, the German word that scientists use for insight is Einfall, which means falling in, you know. And Einstein talked about the Einfall is more important than rational thinking. And other great scientists, Schrödinger, Jung, and all that, emphasize that. But it's not only happens on a single flash. It's a continuous process. When I write and when I speak, if I allow myself to express what is coming to me, then is a continued expansion of my everyday awareness. I don't worry about this happening or not, but it doesn't always happen, but it happens frequently enough so I'm beginning to have some confidence in it. When I write, if I revise things, I'm just doing that these days now. I've got my latest book called The Upshift, Meeting the Challenge. I'm just now revising the last draft of it, and I don't have a preconceived idea of what I want to change in it. But as I write, as I read it, these ideas for change and improvement, hopefully the improvement, come to me, and I allow it to happen, and I make the changes. Mm. I drive my editors crazy sometimes with that. But I allow it because I think something valuable could really happen. And most of the time, the final products of my books and articles is the result of this play, spontaneous play of Einfall, of falling in.
Mm-hmm. Let's quickly look to the future. How do you see science utilizing the Akashic Field, say, in the next 100 years? Would we at some point, obviously they have to accept it, and not all science accept the Akashic Field, but how do you, if you could project 100 years from now, how do you see science accessing and utilizing this field?
Well, I would hope that 100 years from now we'll be here and we'll be more evolved. And this more evolution means in our level of our consciousness, that we have an expanded consciousness, encompasses far more than the limited range. I keep saying, and so do others, that our actual consciousness is not just a receptor of what there is, but it's a filter of what there is. We pick up some elements and not others. I would hope that in 100 years from now, we'll pick up more. Our consciousness will be expanded. So we wouldn't have to go to the specially altered states of deep meditation or trance even, but it would be an everyday level of acceptance. You know, great artists and poets and musicians, they live much of their life in this state of creativity, in this state of expansion, which means that they are in touch with a deeper dimension or higher dimension, depending on how you want to formulate this. But certainly it's not the everyday world, beyond the everyday world. How we use it by being creative. We use it for understanding the world, and we use it for using our understanding to be one with the world, to be happy with what we have, and to belong to the world, and not to separate ourselves off and as a selfish, a small part of the world that could be a cancer, actually, for the rest. To be one with the world, to love of what you have around you, love yourself and love the world as you love yourself unconditionally. Be able to forgive. All of these things are known in the spiritual disciplines, but I think they are a mark truly of a consciousness that is expanded enough to perceive some element of how this world truly is. Not just the game, as I was saying about the game of chess, not just the game, but the laws. What this game really is in terms of what it can, not just what it is, but what it can be. So I hope our consciousness keeps expanding, because a great scientist, the same as the great artists, great creative people at all levels, have an expanded consciousness. It should spread in the world. The more it spreads, the more likely it is that we don't kill each other, they don't work against each other, they don't go counter to the great wave of evolution, but we go with it. We go with the force.
Wow. The book is The Immutable Laws of the Akashic Field. My guest today has been Irvin Laszlo. Irvin, what would you like people to get from this book? How would you wrote it for a certain purpose. What would be a satisfaction for you, for the reader, as a reader?
I would like to see, not just for this book, but altogether, whatever I write, that the result is what is known as the aha experience. It's not that it's something new and amazing. It could be that we are amazed, we are stupefied by it. But the true thing is, the real learning is not something that you invent yourself, but something that you recognize. Recognition. That's, I'm very Platonist in that sense, because Plato said that 2,500 years ago. You not just cognize the world when you learn, you recognize it, you know. So I hope that what people get out of it is that recognition. Yes, this is likely how the world is likely to be. This is likely how I am, really, deep down. And therefore, I can now find myself more at home in the world. I can orient myself more in the world. I find meaning in what we do and in our life. That these are all fallouts or results of reading and trying to understand, not only with your intellect, but with your gut feeling, with your spirit, understand what is communicated here by this notion of a deep field, the Akashic field.
Wonderful. It's been really a pleasure having you on the program. And I look forward to future books, because you seem to be able to continue to write about it. And you really are the voice for the Akashic field. And I really appreciate you being on the program. So thank you.
It's been my pleasure. I really enjoyed our conversation.
You probably noticed that was under our normal time. He is on a real tight schedule, and I wish we had more time to speak with him. I had a bunch more questions, and I'm going to see if I can get him back. He told me off before we started that he has 4 new books, very much philosophical in some of his work. That is a machine. Eloquent in his work, though, very eloquent. So I still am wondering how we identify this Akashic field. Is it like the muse, where you are working on a problem and you shift unknowingly or without great accuracy, you shift into this altered state that taps into the Akashic field? I mean, I am a trained artist. I got a scholarship out of high school to attend a prestigious art college in San Francisco, and I would tap into bit of artwork, and suddenly it was done, you know, beautifully or whatever. As an art director after college, I would shift, you know, unknowingly, and, you know, help produce a magazine things like that are some of the things I'm wondering about. But it was random, you know, and I'm really curious if these yogis who talk in great detail about the Akashic field describe a process. Is meditating alone enough to tap in and acquire data from this Akashic field? Can anybody tap into it? Is it free for everyone? You know, is this, and I've kind of talked a little bit about this with Irvin, is this where our evolution comes from, where you tap in, download data, and all of a sudden you have a whole new scientific method, you have a scientific field, you have a new physics, you have a, you know, what? I mean, there's a ton of other questions that need to be asked. So it's likely we're going to have him back. And I love the topic. So shorter than usual, but still a lot. I think we were 50 minutes, 45. No, it wasn't 45. It was like 50, 55 minutes, just about 5 minutes short of our typical time. So I hope you liked it. Hey, if you're enjoying Earth Ancients, please consider becoming a subscriber. For as little as $5 a month, you can support the work we do here on this podcast. And as you know, Earth Ancients is the big brother to the new kid on the block. That's Destiny. And I hope you've been listening to Destiny. Destiny is a labor of love and covers a lot of topics, but it costs money. It costs resources. And your $5, $10, $15, even $20 a month goes a long way to help us keep these things going. So to become a subscriber, go to Patreon. That's patreon.com/Earth Ancients and register. It's really easy. You don't have to worry about sending any money. They just take it off an ATM each month, your $5, $10, $15. And you don't have to think about it. Hey, and guess what? I just added a new part of this. It's Conversations with Cliff every middle of the month, usually the 15th or around that time. We all get together on Zoom and we talk about the topics we've been covering on Earth Ancients and Destiny, as well as some of the authors and also some insights that I don't talk about on the program. So check it out. And also, we have a whole bunch of free gifts. We have a bunch of free ebooks, and I'm uploading some new ones every month. So lots of gifts, lots of thank yous, and it really helps out. So to become a subscriber, go to patreon.com/Earth Ancients. All right, that's it for this week. I want to thank Bruce Fenton, as always, Ruth Thomas, and my guest today, Irvin Laszlo, thank you for joining me. And our editing team, you guys rock. I really appreciate it. So, all right, thanks, be well, and we will talk to you next time.